But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire. But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire. Good morning, welcome to Playing with Fire, Long Island's only food, wine, and lifestyle show. I'm your host, Tom Shardell, and I'm here with co-host Stu Schrager. Good morning, Stu.
Good morning, Tom. Here we are together in the grandeur of the so-called Windows conference room. Windows studio.
Yeah, we're moving up in the world. We got a nice studio, got a nice outside view. And happy Valentine's Day, by the way.
Well, thank you. Oh, my God, you're wearing your love shirt again.
I am. Oh, yeah. Love Lane shirt for Valentine's Day.
Wow, you didn't get detoured or anything. You're still there.
No, I haven't gone home since I saw you last.
But meanwhile, we're looking out. It's sunshine. Mm-hmm. It looks very breezy out there, and there's very high piles of snow.
Yeah, it's not my favorite season, but you got any plans for today?
No, it's actually a very non-romantic weekend. So I am traveling to Florida on Valentine's Day.
Are you?
And Carrie is meeting me the next day. I guess we had made travel plans in advance. She was supposed to be doing some college touring with her daughter,
right?
And it didn't work out, but the itinerary had been made, so we're traveling separately. But it's actually very interesting because we don't have to worry about transportation to the airport. At least I don't, because she's going to take me to the airport.
Nice.
And I'm going to reciprocate. I'm going to pick her up in Florida when she flies in.
You guys have saved $200. I'm impressed.
Yeah, so it's working out well. You know, no romance, but, you know.
Yeah, going out on Valentine's Day is a fool's errand. I mean, it just becomes this, you know, kind of army feeding in and out, you know, trying to get everybody fed before it closes kind of thing, you know.
Well, I still say romance, you know, during COVID is really dicey. There's still some people that just obviously won't dine out. Again, this dining, outside dining is still a little crazy in 18 to 25 degree weather.
Yeah, and the mask throws a fly in the ointment in the making out department, you know what I mean? So it's kind of, it's just definitely, changed a lot, you know?
Definitely. So it's interesting times to say the least, but Carrie had been traveling this week and she made me really jealous when she dined at the Palm in Houston.
Really?
And she had two
steak, steak, and more steak.
No, she actually. This is funny. And we might have talked about this before. The Palm is also known a little bit as a nice place for Italian food.
Really?
Not talking about gourmet Italian food.
Yeah, it's
but
chicken,
you know,
parmesan
a nice
or
chicken
something?
Parmesan,
of
or she had lobster gnocchi. Uh-huh. But they have a salad there that's just really, really I love. It's called the Gigi salad, but it's got anything from string beans,
shrimp yeah,
and
I've had it.
Bacon
yeah.
chips.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There they did something interesting. It wasn't just a hard-boiled egg. They actually deviled the egg.
Oh, yeah?
Which we talked about deviled eggs last week.
We did.
She was in Houston, and apparently there's nice neighborhoods in Houston and not so nice. You know, when you get, as Carrie has taught me, when you get to the shopping district where it's porn, but P-A-W-N, you know you're not in the good part
yeah,
of town.
Yeah, for sure.
So she was driving around trying to figure out where to eat, and it wasn't such a good part of town. And then she saw there was a mall, and there was a Palm restaurant
Palm
there,
mall, yeah.
So she did that. But I was sort of jealous because, you know, I said, maybe I'll, you know, get my own share of that. And you can't unless you go into Manhattan.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I used to eat in the Palm in East Hampton
yes.
on a somewhat frequent basis. And the only reason, because I'm not really a steakhouse guy, but my golf partner, Dave, is, you know, he eats more meat than anybody I know. And it's kind of unfair because, you know, all he eats is like porterhouses smothered in lamb chops, and his cholesterol is about 60. You know, I eat salads and fish, and mine's 500. You know, it's just unfair, you know. But anyway, what we would do is we would take turns. You know, we'd play golf, and then whosoever turn it was would pick the restaurant, and he was always the Palm. I would bounce around from here and there, you know. But and his menu was the same. He would order the same thing every time he went. He'd have Clams Casino. He'd have a strip, a prime strip. He'd have mashed potatoes and cream spinach. That was it every time. And an Amstel every time. You know, I'm like, mix it up. Dude, why should I mix it up? I like what I got. You know, it's funny. It's just how people get stuck in certain
things. I have to tell this really funny story about the what is it, East Hampton, Palm?
Yeah.
So I guess it's in a hotel.
Yeah. The Hunting Inn.
But my grandmother, God rest her soul, she was around till 103 years old, and it probably was like her 95th or some really high-end birthday, and we decided to do something different. So I was just new at the radio station at that point, and we were working with a limo company, and they had like a Stutz Bearcat limo or whatever.
Oh, no.
So we I hired that for the day, and my family, we went out and we had dinner at the Palm. And my grandmother, again, understand, she was like 95 years old. She goes, "What's the driver going to do when we eat? Is he going to eat in the help's kitchen?" You know,
in the butler's pantry.
The butler. Yeah, that's essentially what she said.
Yeah.
And you know, at the time, I realized, you know, she had lived through the Roaring Twenties and you know, flapper dancers and whatever in Chicago. But that was pretty funny. But she had a very nice birthday celebration.
You know, I would think that taking a 95-year-old to a steakhouse is an act of profound cruelty because they have to chew. And generally, you know what I mean? You got to make sure she has tuna.
That she could. She lived to eat. She taught me the fine things of dining. So,
you know, what's great about that generation of women is they were, you know, through their grandmothers and mothers, they were taught to cook. You know, it kind of all evaporated in the late 50s, early 60s, and then women had to go to work. It was just crazy, you know. But I think that was my grandmother's generation was the last generation of really, really soulful,
and you're so on the mark there. Again, growing up, she lived in Manhattan originally. Then she remarried and she moved to Bethesda, Maryland. She married a judge who was a very stodgy white, the most loving guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, he adopted me as though I was his own grandson.
Yeah.
But he was just very traditional. You know, he grew up in a time when, like, he grew up in Chicago. And just like I said, in those days, you know, when someone went out for a dinner, they you know, were dressed in a suit. And if they did something really special, it was in a tuxedo. Mm-hmm. It was a different world. When my grandmother married him, and he was so traditional that every night there was, you know, a really nice meal. But he would come home, and I don't remember if it was him or my grandmother that would make him a martini. So he'd travel from D.C. to Bethesda by bus. She'd pick him up at the bus stop.
Right.
And then they'd get home. He'd, you know, take off his jacket and tie or whatever. And then he would have a martini. And then there was a full dinner, you know, salad like a roast or something.
Yeah.
That was the thing. So then when we went to visit during holidays, we would have anything from, you know, veal roast or just so many different things that when we went home, it was a choice of a meatloaf sandwich or
leftovers,
the lamb or the veal or whatever. It was out of control. But yes, they very, very much the last generation of real cooks.
Yeah, my food sensibility started in my grandmother's kitchen. She used to let me help her out when I was a kid. And she used to grind spinach. She made this great spinach, like a cream spinach with bacon in it and onions. And she used to let me grind it. She had one of them hand grinders that would attach to the counter, you know, it was a screw in the bottom and would tighten up and then you'd hand crank it. You know, that was my first introduction, and the flavors and the aromas of her kitchen still with me today. I mean, I can taste her carrots, and she had this thing she used to call homemade cake, which was just basically a basic cake with, you know, vanilla frosting. But I thought it was just heaven on a plate.
It's,
you know,
what's funny is it brings another memory. Somebody was just talking to me about it, that when they grew up in the city or not the suburbs. But the fire escape was a very...
It was a refrigerator.
It was a refrigerator, and it also was a bedroom many times.
Oh,
they'd put out a piece of plywood across it so nobody would fall through anything.
Sure, yeah.
And then on a hot summer night, that's where they would sleep. But yes, so many times that was where the refrigerated items were in the winter.
Years ago, I dated a woman who lived in Manhattan, and she was doing some private catering. And she had a big party one time. She had a very small apartment. It was like a studio apartment in Gramercy. And she left the windows open. It was the middle of the winter, you know, because she didn't have enough room in her refrigerator to keep all the stuff. So she opened the windows and, you know, basically, you know, kept everything at like 32 degrees or 33 degrees, whatever it was, you know. So I said, necessity is the mother of invention thing. You know, you just do what you have to do to make it all work. So listen, on the subject of restaurants, which is why I'm here, I went to a restaurant that's becoming one of my favorites in Nassau County the other night. Copper Hill, have you ever been there?
I've passed it 101 million times.
I have an odd history there, you know. It was called La Marmite for years and years and years. And my father-in-law at the time took us there when my ex-wife and I were kids. I guess we were about 16 years old or 17 years old. And we had dinner there with my mother-in-law, my father-in-law, and my ex-wife and I when we were kids, you know. And I was very impressed because it was this beautiful old, like, mansion-y kind of house, you know. And it was French cuisine. There was tableside cooking going on. And that old, you know, 40s Crepe Suzette and you know, Cherry's Jubilee and Chateaubriand and duck at the table, you know, carved and Dover sole. It was really kind of cool, you know. Made an impression on me because I was cooking at the time, and you know.
Well, because again, you're making me think of things like the John Peel room.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, the same.
That was the same era. And so then, you know, that was the only time I ate there. And then it turns out that a dear friend of mine, Bill Holden, who owns West End Cafe and Market Bistro, or used to own West End Cafe and Market Bistro, was the chef there for years before he went to. So we reminisced about the place all the time. And now it's become Copper Hill. And I got a call a couple of years ago from my friend Nelson, the writer, Nelson DeMille. And he said that his buddy had opened this restaurant for his son and, you know, could I help him out if he needs any help or whatever? Yeah, I'd be happy to. It turns out he didn't need any help. He's fine. But it turned into this Copper Hill. So I've been kind of on the periphery of this thing for like 40 years, you know. Anyway, so I've been going there, you know, I don't know, once every 3-4 weeks or whatever, you know. So I went the other night.
It's not local for you at this point.
Well, no, but it's, you know, it's a ride, but it's worth the ride, you know. And so I'm sitting at the bar because I like to eat at the bar, you know. For a couple of reasons. One is you never lose your waiter. You know, he's always there. And two is if, you know, I get into some kind of a domestic dispute, there's always somebody to talk to, you know, which is kind of nice too, you know. So not that that happens to me, but I hear it happens to other people. So
there you go.
Anyway, so I'm sitting there and I had, I ordered a glass of wine. I had this really interesting Austrian Pinot Blanc called Heidi Boden, which is, if you get a chance to try it, just give it a shot. It's fabulous. And I had an octopus with like a Romesco type of vinaigrette with white beans. It was really good, really well done. And then I just had some appetizers. And what he did was he did a ramen noodle, but he did it in Italian style, a cacio e pepe, you know, with cheese and pepper, which is almost like a, I don't want to say national dish because Rome isn't the nation, but it's a Roman thing. It's very, very popular in Rome. And I've had it over there, and it's really brilliant in its simplicity. It's just basically pasta with a little bit of butter, you know, pecorino romano cheese, and pepper, black pepper, a lot of pepper.
And still a broth because it was ramen?
No broth. Oh. No, he just did the ramen noodles.
Oh, wow.
He just did almost like a pasta. So it could have been spaghetti.
I must admit, I didn't realize I was a creative chef because sometimes when I don't have traditional pasta, I might have some ramen. And
you're a Luddite when it comes to
cooking.
I have
some meatballs and ramen.
My neophyte, who knew you were such an artist? Yeah, I know. Anyway, so it was just brilliant, and he does such a great job there. Anyway, so I can't recommend it highly enough. It's a fabulous place. It's on Williston. It's in Williston, East Williston Park.
It's Hillside Avenue, I think, right?
Hillside Avenue is right next to the police station. So be careful when you're drinking wine because you can get yourself in a bunch of trouble.
I spent the night there once, and it wasn't the restaurant.
Anyway, so because I have to have two glasses of wine. One's never enough, right? So I had a second glass. I had a Le Truffier Chenin. Chenin is a Cabernet Franc that's grown in the Loire region of France. And just really nice, smoky, earthy, black peppery, just great little wine, you know. And they're not expensive. I think they were $12 a glass or something like that. So he's not only a talented guy, he's got an eye on value. And I know Greg, the chef. His name is Greg Kearns, and maybe I'll bring him on. I'll have him come on and talk to us about the restaurant.
So a light bulb just came on. As I always tell everybody, we're able to communicate with you individually through email. So fire@whli.com is the means by which to reach out to Tom and I, and we love getting emails, and we've been getting a lot of emails. But the light bulb that just went on is we've gotten a lot of requests to be able to provide these different suggested wines and restaurants or whatever. And I think the easiest way for us to accomplish this is by setting up a Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
From that, maybe we'll be able to venture on to having our own website. But initially, I guess I'm going to try to get a Facebook page, and then we can post these different wine suggestions and recipes and things of that nature, and again, accommodate the request of our listeners. But again, please continue to write in. It's fire@whli.com. It's really nice to listen to the show on Sunday mornings and then get feedback from everybody. So please continue, fire@whli.com.
All right, I'm going to leave the Facebook stuff to you because I'm not really qualified to do that. So you're going to handle that.
It's funny you say that, but there's some family members of yours that are pretty proficient at it.
Well, it's funny you should mention that because we have a special guest today, and I mean special. My daughter Courtney is going to be with us in right after the break, and she's going to talk about her new business, Sweet Fancy Long Island, and how she got into it and how she's going to support me after I'm too old to do all of this other stuff. So,
well, I'm excited because we've had some of her our delicacies. We had that cake that was golf-themed.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was an incredible chocolate fudge cake. It was the height of like a top hat. It was huge, but it was just so tasty. So then I guess I keep seeing, and it goes back to her Facebook post, all these different desserts that are in a jar. It's like desserts to go.
Oh, yeah. It's a fabulous stuff. So let's take a break. We'll pay some bills, and we'll come back, and we'll bring Courtney in, and we'll chat about it.
Nice.
Right.
Amano Osteria and Wine Bar has been created by Adam Lovett and Tom Shordell to bring the feel and flavors of a true Tuscan Osteria to the North Fork. Amano showcases local growers, farmers, cheese, and winemakers, marrying their ingredients with the taste traditions of the Tuscan countryside. The casual appeal, the flavors of Italy, and a moderate price structure appeal to all, ensuring year-round patronage. This North Fork eatery sends out snappy salads and seafood, pastas and antipasta, along with a respectable wine list. Amano features local vineyards and Italian varietals from the U.S. and Italian wines. The kitchen remains open until 11 and has established a later dining crowd, sparking a local nightlife dining scene. Amano is on the cutting edge of a new high-quality and affordable dining experience on the North Fork. Amano Osteria and Wine Bar, 13550 Main Road in Matatuck. Serving dinner daily, Amano is also open for lunch on Saturday and Sunday. For reservations and further information, call them at 631-298-4800 or visit them on the web at amanorestaurant.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Playing with Fire on 1100 WHLI. Long Island's own food, wine, and lifestyle show with your host, Tom Shordell, chef, author, and restaurateur.
All right, we're back, and we have a special guest today, if you hadn't been listening before. My daughter Courtney's here with us today. Good morning.
Good morning.
And how are you? It's Valentine's Day. You must be pretty busy, I would think.
I've been a little hectic this week. It's been great, but yeah. Super busy, which is nice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So how did you corral her here today? Was she making a delivery? Because I'm sure every minute has been decorating some sort of fancy.
I bribed her with some chocolate. It's Valentine's Day, you know? So anyway, let's go back to the beginning. I mean, way in the beginning, I mean, I started dragging Courtney into kitchens when she was about three or four years old. And it was actually my babysitter. You know, I would have her on visitation days because her mom and I were separated. And I would take her to the restaurant because I was working. I would plant her on the table next to where I was working and have her garnish, you know, dishes with parsley. And then she would go into the refrigerators and steal chocolate mousse. And as she grew older, she kind of worked for me and started bussing tables and working in the pantry and kind of like a utility player. She had experience in all the different stations. And I was totally aware of that. What I wasn't aware of is that she had a penchant for artistic decoration of cakes and pastries. How the hell did all of that start?
I don't know. It's a really good question.
It was almost like the cocoon, you know, the butterfly metamorphosis or whatever, you know?
Well, you know, being in the front of the house for so long, kind of stifles your creativity. And oh, I boy. Do. It does.
It's a different kind of creative. It's, you know, how to get out of
it's how to get out of trouble.
Yeah,
how to not give everything away for free. Very creative in the problem solving. But I'm a kitchen brat at heart. I like being in the back of the house. I like playing with food, all that stuff. And I couldn't tell you why I ended up starting this, but I've always liked doing desserts. And I thought to myself one day, I could probably make a cake. It doesn't seem like rocket science. And after watching a bunch of videos and Instagrams and whatever, I just started. That was about a year and a half ago, maybe.
Yeah. I was shocked at the at the talent. I mean, I don't know where you
Thank you so much.
Yeah, no, I don't know where you got I'm trying to think about where it came from, because your mother doesn't have any talent in that department. I mean, she has other talents, obviously, but not in the baking thing. I don't have it. You know, I don't have the artistic eye for that. It's just not. And I guess it can be a learned thing, but yours looks a little inherent to me. It looks like there's something in there, because you can practice. You know, it's like I'm surrounded by great guitar players, and I could practice every day of my life for 12 hours, and I wouldn't even begin to, you know, be able to learn a Steve Vai song. You know, they're just levels of talent that I think are inherent, and I think you have that. You know, I think you got that inside you.
Well, thank you. I don't know. I think it's a nice, like, combination of my very strange personality trait of, like, being, like, super anal with stuff and, like, having to be exact, and then being a complete mess on the other side of it. So it's kind of the perfect medium for me.
Yeah, plus it's, you know, I always looked at baking almost like going back to kindergarten. You know, you had to. You know, you had a whole bunch of stuff on your desk, and you get the finger paint, you put a smock on, it gets all dirty. You know, it's kind of like that. And I think that the art end of it is what interests me. It's like, you know, I'll make bread sometimes, you know, like focaccia and things like that. It's, you know, simple stuff. And, yeah, it's cool when it comes out, you know, get a bunch of olive oil, dip it, some pepper, and you go, you know. But there's no juice to it like there is with kind of the cakes that you do and cupcakes and things that have that ooh-ah factor when you look at them, you know what I mean? And I think that's the thing that got me to cooking. I mean, I have very little interest in a roasted turkey, you know. But, you know, trying to make foam out of chorizo, you know, that's another story. That's kind of, that appeals to me on a different level.
I wouldn't mind you taking a crack at that next time you're out east. But
just what I want to do on my day off is cook.
Well, I'll just get Harley to ask you.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, we should mention Harley. You know, I don't know if Harley knows this or not, and she may listen to this at some point, but Paco has mommy on the radio, right?
Harley is very excited that Paco's interviewing me today. Yes.
Yeah, we may have to bring her in at some point, you know.
She would be a good guest to have
on. I think so. We'll talk about gnocchi and foods that she's made with me. It'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So take us through the timeline, how it started and how it progressed and what you found out and what you liked and didn't like. And
I probably should have paid better attention to this while I was doing it, but it started really when I was at Kingfish. Mm-hmm. I've thought about doing it for a while, but I was stuck in the office a lot. I was stuck doing a lot of bookkeeping and QuickBooks and scheduling and boring stuff, and I was feeling very bored. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of started making stuff. And then we used some of it for parties. What really happened was there was a market. We did a Valentine's Day market at the restaurant.
I remember that, yeah.
And there was a little trouble with one of the vendors we had, and he wasn't able to make it. So instead of not having the dessert and the cookies and whatever there, I last minute banged out like 200 cookies the night before and packaged it all up, and I really enjoyed it. And then we did another market, another like local vendor market. So I kind of started with that. And then people started just asking me to make cakes. And I don't know why, but they did.
So it started. It just started like organic, you know.
Kind of, yeah. Organic. And it was kind of a side gig, like a side piece business. And then the quarantine happened, and I had absolutely nothing else to do.
Right.
So I got my sourdough starter going, and like everybody else, and really started to try to figure out some sort of business model that I'm still trying to figure out.
But, yeah, they're always fun.
Yep.
I've had hundreds. They never work.
No. That's why I just keep rolling.
Yeah. No, it's really a kind of a fun thing to watch from the chef standpoint and from the dad standpoint, obviously. But it's fun to watch this thing grow. And I've seen it start with, you know, kind of small, like with cupcakes and cookies here and there. And now it's grown into this, you know, You're making cakes that look like, you know, aliens and you know, and kind of Marvel comic characters, golf courses, you know.
It's, oh, yeah.
I mean, the it seems like a limitless, you know, sort of, you know, landscape out there that you can, you know, play with.
It's, well, what's incredible when you think about it, I mean, first it's being able to be creative enough to design tasty desserts. And then so just coming up with the ideas, executing them, and then even the packaging of them, because, again, you have some very interesting packaging concepts. I mean, and especially during the pandemic when everybody wants something, you know, individually packaged.
Yeah. Comes with hand sanitizer.
And then the economics of the marketing of it. So, wow, it's quite a endeavor.
Yeah, it's a bite off more than you can chew scenario. But, you know, it's been fun to kind of wade through the waters of it and figure out what works and definitely figure out what doesn't work.
Yeah, there's always that, you know, balance the art and economics of it, too. You know,
yeah.
I mean, which is, you know, always the, you know, the key. I mean, I've been fighting that my whole life. What I'm most impressed with, honestly, is that you never forgot the flavor.
No.
And that's been a thing with me. I mean, I've dealt with hundreds of bakeries over the years for wedding cakes and stuff and catering parties that I've done, this, that, and the other thing. And some of them can make some really good-looking cakes, and some of them can make some really interesting things, and some of them can make them taste like cardboard. You know, it's unbelievable.
That's so on the mark.
Yeah. That was actually part of kind of – it's always been part of my thing. Like, if it doesn't taste good, why bother?
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
yeah,
I have no desire.
Yeah, but yeah. But off air, Courtney and I were just talking about how difficult it is to manipulate fondant, and – that doesn't even taste good. It's great for decorating, but it's not necessarily the most tasteful.
No. Well, I don't really – I only use fondant. I won't cover a cake in fondant. I don't really love the look of it, but it also – I don't understand why people eat it. I'll use it as like accents on a cake if I need to, but definitely – and also the anxiety that comes for me with trying to cover a cake in fondant. I don't need that. There's not enough wine in the basement to cover a cake in fondant.
Oh, there's enough wine in the basement.
There's not. I'm telling you. I've tried my hand at it. So
I better go down and check it. It sounds like it's been depleted.
You may want to start taking a monthly inventory.
Wait a minute.
And don't just count the bottles, because there might be a bunch of empty ones.
That's right. I just put the empties back with
who's
the cork
the
in.
Here, you know?
Yep. I got the burgundies on lockdown.
So go through a process like about, you know, take me through how when somebody orders something, how you figure out what kind of thing to make for them? Is it a, you know, is it a back and forth? I mean, obviously you got to get kind of an idea from them, but, and then how do you go about, you know, executing the whole thing?
Yeah, it generally starts out more or less the same way. Someone will contact me. Either they have an idea of what they want or they don't. Usually if it's something for their kid, like a child, they have an idea. And if it's just something for themselves or an adult, they're kind of like open.
Yeah.
So I like to kind of take my time and do a little recon, send them some inspiration picks to narrow it down. That helps me a little bit. It also lets me kind of control what I think I can do and what I think I can do well.
Yeah.
In that respect. And that's more or less it.
Yeah. And then so the process starts, you know, you know, like I remember we at the radio station, one of the DJs, Jim Douglas, had some eye surgery and was coming back, and Stu had asked me to ask you about a golf cake. I don't know if you'd made one before, but, you know, I mean, how do you start that process? How do you, I mean, you're thinking about, okay, I got a green, what does it look like? How am I going to make a sand trap? You know,
see, and I saw that. That's where I was talking about the Facebook post.
Courtney, Facebook? You have a list?
Yeah, all of a sudden.
Oh, Stu.
It must be that wine that Courtney brought.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, I would do the whole show like that, but I know we're going to get mail.
But Courtney's quite adept in social media, so she's on Instagram and she's also on Facebook. And I keep seeing these different posts, and I saw that she did a golf-themed cake, and we asked her to duplicate that for us.
Yeah. Well, I'm curious how that started, the golf-themed cake.
I don't know. I don't remember who the first one – I don't know why. I have no memory at all these days, but – somebody asked for a golf cake, kind of the same, whoever it was, and if you are listening to this, I'm very sorry.
The person's husband or wife.
Exactly.
Was a freak, you know?
Yeah. So that was it. And then I went on, I found some inspiration picks, and then, you know, they liked whatever it was, and I kind of just go from there. I'll put my own spin on it. You know, you don't want to, like, replicate somebody else's something. You got to do your own thing a little bit. Sure. But, you know, at some point, they're all going to look,
yeah,
they're going to look in the same family.
From somewhere, yes.
Yeah.
So I'm not the smartest guy in the group, but, you know, having a father that's running a kitchen at a very prominent golf club, it looks like it will be a very nice spring and summer for you, Courtney.
I hope so.
We did a golf cake for some of the ladies there.
Was that what it was? Is that that's what I did it. So then I just made that all up. You didn't email me.
There's going to be a lot of requests, and there's going to be a lot of variations.
Yeah. Variations on a theme, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But so, yeah, well, this is good news because if anybody out there is looking for, you know, a cake and somebody, you know, the husband and wife is into tennis or golf, well, hopefully not into curling. I don't know how you would do that, but, you know.
Figure it out.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of fun to be able to, from the customer standpoint, I would think, to be able to kind of, you know, target the cake to whatever, you know, occasion or whatever sport or whatever, you know, idiosyncratic thing that the person has, you know.
So what got you to be thinking about crumbs? Because you posted something about crumb cakes or something last week.
So I'm working on some new stuff for, like, I'm taking my 2020 lessons and trying to get better at some stuff for 2021 in terms of, you know, production and getting stuff out and not driving myself crazy. So I am going to start, like, a little line of boxes that I'm calling Fancy Grams, and I want to do a brunch box and the brownies or whatever. But with my baby, my sourdough starter, I'm very into my sourdough starter. I want to do one with all sourdough recipes. So I was doing a couple of different kinds of sourdough crumb cakes, which are fantastic.
Let me stop you for a second for those in the audience who doesn't
I'm making both of you nervous today.
Those guys doesn't know that, you know. Anyway, for those who don't know what a sourdough starter is, why don't you just let them know and explain it?
It was, you know, right behind banana bread on the quarantine trend setting thing, but it's you know, you're creating a base for making sourdough bread. So it's just a combination of water and flour, and you have to feed it like a pet. You know, if it dies, you're much less sad than if it was something else for
yeah,
you forgot
yeah,
to feed.
It's not like Rover.
No, but it takes about a week to get going. And the cool thing about it is making sourdough bread is still just a little more annoying than I want it to be.
Yeah.
But the sourdough discard recipes, which is the stuff you throw out every day before you feed your base starter, are amazing. So, yeah. And there's so much more you can do with it.
So to elaborate on it, what happens with a starter is that you mix the flour and the water and you let it sit, and it actually gathers yeast naturally from the atmosphere. And what you have to do every day is you have to feed it. Again, like she said, like it was a baby, and you have to remove some of it and then feed it again with the you know, more flour and water.
Yeah.
So it just stays. Some people have starters that have been alive for 25 years.
Yeah.
You know, bake shops and stuff. So it's really kind of cool. And it's what gives the sourdough that tang, that sourness, you know.
Which
that,
is the, like, the best thing ever.
Oh, it's, I mean, even in rolls. I mean, you know, you need big equipment to make good sourdough bread. You need steam injected ovens and, you know, whatever, you know. It's hard to make that at home. I mean, you can make a little roll and pull it off for the family, but it's not like you're going to be able to do that commercially without, you know, tremendous equipment.
So. No, and it's just the, you know, I'm a little bit of a procrastinator, so doing something that takes a full 24 hours, it's not my bag. Yeah. I can't schedule that far in advance.
No, you lose interest after the third
100%.
Hour. 100%. Let me go watch Oprah.
Yep, you know? It overproofs it, I don't care, I'm over it, so, yeah.
I hear you. So, I'm sorry, I interrupt you. Continue. So, how did you get into the crumb cake thing?
That was it. I was just messing around.
Oh, just, yeah?
Yeah. And it was, you ate them.
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were good.
Yeah,
really
they were good. Yeah, the cinnamon ones, really. Like, yeah, that's the winner.
What are these breakable, hard Valentine's Day boxes that you got involved with?
So, you know, as always, needing to be on the cutting edge. But, like, hot cocoa bombs were the thing for Christmas. They almost put everyone I know into therapy around me. That
me
anybody that had a walk in that house during Christmas was in therapy.
Well, explain what they are.
Well, the hot cocoa bombs themselves are the, like, all the rage. They're a chocolate shell, and they're filled with any sort of flavor, hot cocoa mix or homemade hot chocolate that you want. You put it in a cup, you pour hot milk over it, it turns into, it's fun. It's like a fun thing.
It melts in there, yeah.
So the breakable heart thing is kind of in that family. That's the newest craze for Valentine's Day, which has been very, very popular. But it's, again, a chocolate molded shell in the shape of a heart. I use a geo model, so it's got that that angular kind of whatever geode look. And it's filled with you can fill it with whatever you want. I fill it with an assortment of candies, chocolate, caramels, the conversation heart, whatever those things are, the conversation hearts for Valentine's Day. And and that's it. And you package it up all nice. It comes with a mallet, and then you get to break it open.
Yeah. Nice. Broken heart.
Broken
heart for Valentine's
Day.
Exactly. Seems counterproductive, but once you get inside.
I put a cute little note in it. I forget what it says, but it's something like, this is the only heart of mine, like, you can break. It doesn't, it's, you know.
Nice.
It's also good for Galentine's Day for any single ladies out there.
Yeah. So, you know, a couple of the cakes I've seen that really impressed me is, Stu, did you ever see the one with the beer bottle that's pouring the beer onto the cake?
No.
Yeah, it's crazy. You should look it up on the internet sometime. But she actually had a cake that was two or three layers high with a beer bottle suspended over it, maybe, 8-10 inches over it, with actually the beer coming out, pouring over the cake. It's
that's
like crazy.
Cool.
I actually have to do one of those today with M&Ms.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, that's what I'm doing after this.
Oh, that should be fun.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, your website is what, sweetfancyli.com?
Sweetfancyli.com, exactly.
Yeah, L.I. for Long Island, in case anybody forgets. But, if you go on that website, you can see all the pictures of all of these confections, as they call them. And really interesting stuff. And
thanks, Dad.
Fun for any kind of, celebration that you have or whatever. You can see.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, you see it?
And it's so contemporary because it's not even beer. It's one of these.
I've done it with beer, too. That's the White Claw one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's so funny how things become just part of culture. For Christmas, Carrie's niece got her dog a White Paw.
Oh, my God.
So it's like soft pillow cans. And the dog's got a whole bunch of different flavors.
Yeah, well, of course, you know.
There's citrus and there's strawberry.
It's funny, going way off subject for a second, and it just rang a bell.
How unusual for this show.
Well, yeah, but it's usually you, though. You know, you never put the blinker on when you go. At least I'm putting the blinker on here. I'm giving you a warning. You know? But anyway, I was at Trattoria in St. James last week.
That place
sometime.
Is great.
Oh, great, great place. And Steven, the owner, who is a talented chef, nice guy, and drop-dead funny in a dry, extremely dry kind of way. And I was talking about something that happened in a restaurant when a customer was completely out of her mind. And he goes, you know, complete deadpan. He goes, the strangest one I ever had is I had a guy who used to come in when I was working out in the Hamptons. He'd come in with his dog, and his dog actually sent the steak back. And I almost wet my pants.
That's
it was just
amazing.
Like, yeah.
I haven't heard that
reason,
one.
No, for some reason, the dog didn't like the steak, and the guy sent the steak back for another one. I don't know if it was more fire, less Alpo, whatever. You know, whatever.
That's so thing funny. Was. Is that Stephen Gallagher?
Yeah, Stephen Gallagher.
Yeah, he's a good dude.
Oh, yeah. And if you ever get a chance to eat at Trattoria, it's great. You should make a reservation. There's only about 15, 20 seats in there, especially now during COVID, you know. And they fill up quickly, but he's a talented guy, a lot of fun. All right, let's take a little break. We'll pay some more bills and we'll come back and we'll continue on.
Amano Osteria and Wine Bar has been created by Adam Lovett and Tom Shordell to bring the feel and flavors of a true Tuscan Osteria to the North Fork. Amano showcases local growers, farmers, cheese and winemakers, marrying their ingredients with the taste traditions of the Tuscan countryside. The casual appeal, the flavors of Italy, and a moderate price structure appeal to all, ensuring year-round patronage. This North Fork eatery sends out snappy salads and seafood, pastas and antipasta, along with a respectable wine list. Amano features local vineyards and Italian varietals from the U.S. and Italian wines. The kitchen remains open until 11 and has established a later dining crowd, sparking a local nightlife dining scene. Amano is on the cutting edge of a new high-quality and affordable dining experience on the North Fork. Amano Osteria and Wine Bar, 13550 Main Road in Matituck. Serving dinner daily, Amano is also open for lunch on Saturday and Sunday. For reservations and further information, call them at 631-298-4800 or visit them on the web at AmanoRestaurant.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Playing with Fire on 1100 WHLI, Long Island's own food, wine, and lifestyle show, with your host, Tom Shawdell, chef, author, and restaurateur.
And our guest today is my lovely and talented daughter, Courtney, who has this fabulous baking business called Sweet Fancy LI, and LI for Long Island. SweetFancyLI.com is her website if you want to see what's on there. And we've been talking about some of the things that she's been making, and I wanted to go into briefly into cupcakes, which is one of my favorites, by the way.
Really?
As long as there's time to talk about the desserts in a jar.
Oh, yeah, yeah, totally.
Or the brownies, the new brownies.
All right, well, let's start with the brownies. You seem excited about that.
I am, because they're new.
Yeah, I know the feeling.
Well, you got to eat one of them.
I did.
Yes, I more or less force-fed you.
Force-fed me like a duck.
Yeah, exactly.
My liver is swelling.
But, yeah, that's part of the new, like, box thing. But the brownies... it's, you know, almost a familial thing. You know, Mom, Aunt Carol, you make your killer brownies. It's it's generational at this point.
Sure.
Legacy status. So I need to up the game, and I figured what better way to do it. Yeah. Let's be honest. the new things are the brownies. The most popular one for Super Bowl, it was a Super Bowl thing, were the bacon and potato chip brownies.
Yeah.
And then s'mores and peanut butter, and I'm working on some other fun stuff. So
yeah, there's nothing like, I mean, brownies are, you know, the quintessential comfort food for the ages. I mean, you know, ice cream and brownies, I mean, doesn't get any more comforting than that.
Nope.
Yeah, peanut and chocolate to me has always been that classic combination. It's a Reese's cup, you
it's
know
the best.
I mean, oh yeah, it's just they go together. And you know, coming from me, I never ate peanut butter as a kid, which is kind of unusual.
Really?
Because every kid eats peanut butter.
Yeah.
I don't think I tasted peanut butter until I was 25. It just never appealed to me. I don't know why.
I don't understand that. It's the best thing ever.
We never had it in the house. I mean, my mother never bought it. You know, my mother's English. What does she know about
true.
Peanut butter?
Yeah,
you know?
Marley.
Yeah, to her it was margarine. You know what I mean? But it was something I never really ate. And I kind of prefer it with, you know, chocolate than I do with jelly, you know, honestly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But the brownie, I thought that the live radio here, Stu Schrager's live radio show, he brought his guitar in today just to, you know, give us a little.
Just wanted to remind you I was here.
Yeah, all right. Well, why don't you just say something? It was easy, you know. I tell you, it's never dull. What was I talking? Oh, yeah. So the brownies with the bacon and the potato chips, I thought was... a really interesting kind of flavor.
Well, if Ben and Jerry's can do it, why can't you do
did
something?
They? I don't even, I should
they,
know
they
that.
They have something like the American Dream. It's ice cream with pretzels and potato chips and whatever.
You know, potato chips are an underused medium, I think, because it's the perfect salty balance. Like we were talking before where you said something about the chocolate, like having like a little salty thing. I always use salt, and I get that from you.
Yeah, yeah.
You are like the salt king of, you know, make sure you season everything.
Yeah, you season everything as you
including your desserts,
well,
by the way.
Again, I'm realizing that I was a gourmet genius way back when in fourth grade when I used to put potato chips on top of my hamburger.
Those are two words I never used associating with you. Gourmet. And genius, you know what I mean? You've displayed your genius already this morning.
I was ahead of my time using a potato chip as part of the meal.
You get texture, you get salt. It's perfect.
Well, it really is. It works as a salt. Like, I mean, I've crusted fish with it, you know, on the outside, potato crusted fish. And, you know, everybody thinks we're using mashed, but not. We're using potato chips, you know. So it's kind of in the lexicon of, you know, culinary, you know, sleights of hand, you know, so to speak. But it adds a nice little shot there. You know, it's like salted caramel. I mean, caramel is great. Put salt in, it's better.
Yep.
Know?
So how are you serving these brownies? Is it trays of brownies?
I've been boxing them up in like the nice little like packaging.
And have you been doing blonde and chocolate or just?
Yeah. Yeah. I have a blondie that I've been making, but it's really the chocolate brownies that, you know, you see a couple of different cool flavors of Stu. Yeah. Fantastic.
I'm telling you.
I feel like
I'm
at a concert.
How do you get that tone on your guitar? I've been looking for that tone my whole life.
It's a special wah-wah pedal.
I get that.
Yeah. But yeah, so I think the you know, the trick to the brownies is once you have the chocolate in it, that's what people want. They see the chocolate. They're just like, the darker, the better.
And the whole key is quality. I mean, there's different levels of chocolate out there. I mean, you can get, you know, what I call baker's chocolate, which is fine. It's utilitarian and it works. But, you know, you use Calibu or Valrhona or something like that. That's a whole different flavor.
It's just. It's night just, and day.
Do you do like a so thick good. Brownie or is
yeah, it has to be. So like the ones I've been doing are about this thick.
They can't see that on the radio.
Yeah, you can't see that? You can't see my hand?
Obviously,
I have a face for radio.
The same school as I did.
Let me get my guitar.
Complete amateurs over here, you know? How do they do this to me?
Please. I'm the one who started the radio in this family, by the way. But mine are, yeah, the ones I've been making are about 2 inches high.
Wow.
And at least. And they're, I've been cutting them like 3 by 5 inches, 3 by 4. So they're like big bars.
And you said you use nuts in yours?
I do one with peanut butter, but it's a peanut butter mousse that's a separate layer on top of the brownie. Then that's covered in ganache. And, no actual nuts. I don't use a lot of actual nuts.
I guess a lot of brownies do have nuts in it, and I like the ones without.
Yeah,
nuts.
I don't really like nuts in my brownies.
I don't
so
either.
It never even occurs to me to put
chocolate,
them in.
No. And plus, you know, there's so many allergies out there that you can't. I mean, I don't put pine nuts in my pesto anymore just because I don't want to hear it. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, nuts in there. Yeah. And you know what's funny? When we were kids, when I was a kid back in the Lincoln administration, you know, if you had a nut allergy, you didn't eat nuts.
That's it.
Now, if you have a nut allergy, the entire county has to remove every nut, and it's unbelievable.
Wait, I'm almost speechless, which some viewers, listeners might enjoy. But how can you make pesto?
As evidenced by some of the mail we've gotten.
How do you make pesto without pine nuts?
You just don't put them in.
So it's what is it? So, but isn't that the main ingredient?
No, it's basil.
No. Oh.
But if you're a genius, this is what you
I know it's here. Basil, pine nuts, and an olive oil.
Why don't you give the audience your recipe for pesto? I'd like to see the mail come back in on that. How'd it work out? Well,
that's an old family recipe.
You should use pistachios
like nut,
anyway.
Sometimes you don't, you know?
Really?
Oh, I make the best pesto. I really do.
Wow.
The show's devolved into
I'm really patting myself on the back today. But, pistachios or cashews, that's what I use in my pesto.
Yeah, I just eliminate them all. It's just easier, you know? I don't want to hear it. Anyway, so these boxes, have you worked out, like, is there a menu of boxes?
It's coming. It's actually coming this week.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'll be done with it. Valentine's Day got the better of me this week. So.
Yeah, well, that's
You're working on some really incredible deadlines, because amongst your posts is the last day to place Super Bowl orders, the last day for my Valentine.
Well, it's like any relationship. I'm really needing to set boundaries for the new year. So I have to give myself enough time because I learned over the past holiday season that I am too old to be up at 5 o'clock in the morning.
I think it's called focus. You know, you have to kind of focus and do what makes sense and eliminate what doesn't.
Yeah.
You know, it's like in any business, you know.
But it's fun.
Yeah,
it's so much fun.
Listen, you know, it's funny. I've talked to friends all the time. You know, one of my dear friends, Roger Vi, Steve's older brother. retired recently, and he was talking to me about it. You know, he says, I couldn't wait. I'm finally out. It's so good. This, that, and the other thing. When are you going to retire? And I thought about it for a minute. I'm like, I really have no interest in retiring. I really still like it, you know? I don't enjoy the legal aspect of it and all of the problems that, you know, come with employees and this, that, and the other thing. But the pure cooking, I don't think that ever goes out of your blood. It's like, will Billy Joel ever stop playing piano? I'm going to retire, sell my piano, and hang out. You know, I don't think it's going to happen. You know, when you're in arts, it's different. You know,
but like in all honesty, as an aside, in the last year, you seem to have been like a little rejuvenated in that respect, which is nice to see.
Well, I'm not as beat up. I mean, you know, I was getting like lawyered to death, and it was just becoming a grind. And you know, I mean, when you're being sued every 20 minutes for stuff that never happened, it just gets to you after a while. And I think. That's taken that and the fact that there's been an evaporation of the bottom line, you know, kind of takes your will to do it out, you know.
Well, yeah. And I finally get you to cook in the house now, which is
it wasn't you. It was my granddaughter, you know. You, I would have said no. Her, I can't
You've
say
been
no
saying no to me for 36 years. You know, so the 37th, I finally got some dinners.
Father's prerogative.
Yep.
You know.
So you mentioned Steve I and Roger. You know, that was an annual thing that I really, really enjoyed. 9 out of 10 times, Steve would come to town, you know, once a year. He'd play Westbury Music Fair, what I'll always call Westbury Music Fair.
Yeah.
And watching Roger Holdcourt.
Oh, yeah. No, he's the mayor. He's the mayor of Call Place.
Oh, my God.
Uncle you know, Raj?
The afternoon would start when Steve's bus would arrive. Yeah. Roger would arrive with, like, 12 pies.
Nine
to put
pizzas,
on,
yeah.
To go onto the bus. And then just holding court. It was, you know.
Oh, he's hilarious.
Roger's the best.
And then the best was when after watching, I guess it was the last time in town, and Steve was playing with Zach Wilde, and he said.
It was Zach Wilde, Nuno Betancourt, Tosin Abasi.
But I think it was Zach who his brother wanted to meet, and he went back there, and he was so excited.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, he's like a little kid, Roger. He's a little kid trapped in a man's body. Great guy, one of my all-time favorite people. You know, you won't get a purer soul than Roger.
Yeah, because everybody else came out from backstage except for Zach, and Roger just was like, whoa, this is cool.
Yeah. Well, he kind of looks like Roger. He's big and bulky and, you know, kind of bikerish and, you know, kind of fun. And he's a very gentle guy, Zach. He's, a very nice guy. Yeah, anyway, so back to the cupcakes. I wanted to talk about the cupcakes for a minute. And you have some incredibly interesting flavor combinations there with the icing and, you know, and different stuff. How did that all come about? Is that just trial and error?
Yeah, but, you know.
Because you even done savory, right?
I'm actually doing that right after here in the M&M cake. I have to the cupcakes for Pominock Vineyards this weekend for their Valentine's Day special. But, yeah, it's, you know, I feel like I'm the type, feel weird calling myself a baker of sorts, but
an artisan.
Let's not get weird about it. Dad, stop, Dad. Yeah, that I agree with. But I'm a cook. Like I like being in the kitchen. I'm a kitchen person. So and flavors and food and. You know, most of the stuff you eat is savory anyway. So to incorporate, it's all about a balance.
Yep.
Any kind of dish you make, whether it's dinner, breakfast, brunch, dessert, it should all be balanced. So I kind of operate on that perspective. But yeah, the savory ones, like this weekend I'm doing an olive oil cupcake. And that's coming with a vanilla buttercream. And then there's the goat cheese icing. With the vanilla cake, and strawberries,
goat cheese icing.
These cupcakes are made specifically to pair with wines
to pair
at Pominock
with the wines.
Vineyards.
Yeah,
so they're doing a pairing between cupcakes and wine. So she was asked to do some flavors that would be kind of more complementary to the wine rather than so sweet.
Exactly, but that's the fun part. It's the like kind of that scratch creating stuff like for a specific purpose.
Oh yeah,
is where I have the most fun.
Yeah, the creativity part is the part that hooks us all in. I mean, you know, like cooking, you know, 100 pieces of fish a night is, you know, can get like arduous, you know. But thinking about it and coming up with it and being in the kitchen, like I like going into the kitchens when there's nobody there.
Yes.
Just screwing around with things.
Playing.
And seeing what works and what doesn't. And, you know, I've had, and we always, you know, in Playing with Fire, we're always encouraging people to go in and try and use an ingredient you haven't used before or try a technique you haven't had before. And if you blow it, so what? You know what I mean? You're going to eat three times a day, roughly, you know, so you have another two chances at it that day. I mean, I've blown hundreds of dishes, and I get paid for it, you know what I mean? So don't be afraid to screw up, because that's how you learn, you know?
So is that the show's word of the day, arduous?
Arduous is, you know what it means? I'm just checking.
It must be boring.
Yeah. Well, difficult. But, yeah, it's kind of the creative process, if you have it in your DNA, you almost can't do anything else. I remember, you know, when I was in the Hamptons years ago, we used to close for the winter and we were broke and I would do construction work or something for the winter. And I would find myself buying a cookbook on my lunch hour, you know, to just read. Mm-hmm. You look like you want to say something.
Were those the days of that special cognac that disappeared at that Montauk bar?
I know that story.
It was, yes. Yes, it was about a half a gallon, actually. At 200 an ounce, or three, depending on who you ask. Yeah, long story for another day.
Well, just real quick. So I'm at down in Florida a couple of weeks ago, as I had talked about, and we're celebrating one of our friend's birthday, and the husband was the host. And the cheapest guy at the table was ordering a $40 version of Grand Marnier.
Oh yeah,
this is afternoon. Now normally, you know, he'd be stealing somebody else's drink from the table, but because it was on, you know,
yeah, everybody was splitting it.
No, this was on the host.
Oh,
himself.
On the host, oh, so, even better.
So yeah. You know, there was he just couldn't help himself.
I tell you a funny quick story. I had a guy come into Cool Fish one time, and I knew him. He was actually a friend's father, and he was notoriously thrifty, okay? So he comes in, and he orders a bottle of wine. It was like 45, 50 bucks, whatever it was. And a friend of his had come in and was seated at an adjacent table, and his friend was excited to see the fella. So he said, hey, when you get, you know, the waiter came over, when you get a second, I'd like to buy a bottle of wine or whatever he's drinking for Mr. So-and-so, Mr. Thrifty, right? So waiter says, okay. So the waiter comes over with the $40 bottle of wine, presents it to Mr. Thrifty, and said, here's the wine you ordered. And that gentleman over there said he'd like to buy you a bottle. Mr. Thrifty says, no, that's not the bottle I ordered. I ordered the Stag's Leap, which is $150. It's like, who does this, you know? Mr. Thrifty, you know?
Some people.
Oh, my God. It's just, you know, there's a complete correlation between shameless and thrifty that you need to have to be, like, at the top of the game. I mean, if you have a little bit of shame, you can't be quite that thrifty. If you have none, you can take it to the moon. It's hilarious. Absolutely hilarious. So, anyway, why don't you give us a wrap about, you know, where to find you and how to get in touch and
well, I can be found
vital statistics.
Well, thank you so much. On all the socials, which, like I'm telling you, you guys need to get into Instagram and away from Facebook.
When I find out what that is,
please, I'm gonna take care of it for you. Okay. But on all the socials, I'm at Sweet Fancy LI. Website is www.sweetfancyli.com, and my email is sweetfancyli@yahoo.com.
Phone number?
It's
no, okay.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, haven't gotten that far yet. It's my cell, so okay, you can find it if you really need it. But yeah, so. Again, for any custom cakes, sweet treats, fun stuff.
Dessert tables.
Dessert tape charcuterie. Dessert charcuterie
yeah,
boards.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Fun dessert tables for kids' parties and stuff.
Oh, yeah. With my 3- and my 5-year-old, I'm specializing.
All right. So we're going to say goodbye. Would you like to take us out with another guitar solo, or do you want me to do this?
No, I think no? Your words
your fingers are killing you. Yeah. All right. So listen, Harley, Hawk, we're going to say goodbye to Mom, right, and thank her for coming in today. And we're going to close the show with Tom's 3 keys to life, which are always life is too short to drink bad wine. Treat every meal like it was your last and keep chocolate in your life as important as sex and pizza.